Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. All three of us are professional illustrators and have been working for about the last 25 years. We've worked with just about every major publisher and publication in the business. Together, we've published probably over 100 books. We've been saying 50, but it's probably over 100. And we've all taught illustration at the universities.
That's right. I'd say our book count's over 1,000, maybe. 10,000.
Are we counting copies printed?
Yeah, sure.
Just up the number every time.
Counting individual pages. Yes, each week we're going to come at you with a different topic. Sometimes we're going to agree. Sometimes we're going to argue, like today. But each time you're going to learn something brand spanking new.
All right. Updates. What's going on in the world of Lee White?
I am into finished art on my book. I'm so excited to be doing finished art. It's just so much fun after such a long period of sketching. So I'm just cruising through these things. And what's nice is I did color studies and I'm just kind of going through them without thinking. I have music on, I got my coffee, and it's what being an illustrator is all about, in my opinion, like this phase of the project.
It's like the movie poster for illustration. You're actually living out.
I'm doing the actual part the of being an illustrator. So it's great. I got a couple projects going, and I'm doing all these paintings, big paintings for my show. So actually feeling pretty artsy right now.
That's good. You look artsy. You're looking good.
Feel artsy. Yeah. I should have paint on me. That would make me more authentic.
That's true. And a smock.
I got a smock. I'm going to go get it.
Will, how about you? What's up with you?
Oh, I'm getting ready to send my secret project off to my editor. And so that's been fun compiling that.
Is this secret project going to be self-published, or are you looking to find a publisher?
I'm not going to say yet.
Okay. And is your editor...
My chest.
So your editor is a freelance editor.
Yeah.
Okay. I still owe you something for that project, by the way, which is coming right when we hang up, right when we get done with this podcast. It's coming your way.
You do. Yeah. Also, I've got a pretty good distraction going on right now that I'm not going to talk about.
All right. Man, Will is a...
God, you're enigma. What do they call it on Facebook? You're a vague booker. You're just mentioning things that you can't talk about. Boy, today sure was terrible. Why was it terrible? Not saying.
Not saying. I don't want to share.
Wow. All right.
Okay, so let's move into the meat. Actually, I didn't update myself.
What are you doing? Jake's got his new studio going on.
I'm doing skip book. I don't know. That was a dumb joke. All right. What's going on with me is I just went up to Utah this last weekend to get my studio. As you know, I'm moving down to Arizona, and I did it in waves. So we brought the family's stuff, and I left. Like, I brought just a portable studio, I guess, just a desk and my computer setup. And I went back to get my reference library, all my shop stuff, my books that I sell online. All that stuff is now down here in Arizona with me, and it feels good to be, like, I feel like I'm ready to just create, to get busy. So
that's nice. So you're feeling a little more settled, in other words.
A lot, yeah. Yep.
So what hat are you wearing right now?
This hat I'm wearing, I found it in the ocean, actually.
It looks like that.
It's like a...
What is it?
It's like the hat equivalent of a Hawaiian shirt, so it's got like a beach pattern on it.
It's definitely a thing. It's a thing.
Yeah. I brought it home, washed it, and now I just wear it. So... It's good. It's you know, everybody has sort of like a signature look to them, like a certain style. And I always was like, what's my signature element? So you think of like, Steven Spielberg has those not dark glasses, but like he's got like rimmed glasses that he wears.
Right, right, right. And then the black turtleneck from Steve Jobs. And
yeah. Yeah. Martin Scorsese has like even thicker black rimmed glasses. So I was like, well, what's me? You know, what am I going to do? And I found this hat. And I'm like, there it is.
I don't know, man. We might want to shop a few different looks around and then we'll see
what
which one.
What about this nose thing you're wearing?
Oh, Bruiser.
Okay, yes.
The people on the podcast can't see, but
yeah, if there's ever a time you guys want to go look at this on video on our YouTube channel, you're going to want to see Jake because he's been beat up pretty bad this week.
So I have a huge bruise on the ridge of my nose, and it's because there's a bunch of art thieves running out of a gallery stealing artwork, and I was like, no, you guys can't do that. And I headbutted him.
He said it just like that. Hey, you guys.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. Who's going to stop us? No, what really happened was the sliding glass door was closed when I thought it was open. And I rammed right into it.
The art thieves is way more.
I like the desert wolves story. But
all right, let's get down to it. This is the style episode. We're going to talk all about style today. And I want to start off describing each other's style. I don't want us to describe our own style. I want the other two of us to describe the third person style. Whoa. So, Will, how would you describe Lee's style?
If I'm nice about this, will you guys be nice back?
No.
We're going to be honest.
But shouldn't be this. Wait, do you need to clarify that? Is there some kind of negative barb that you're going to work in?
Okay, I'll describe Lee's. So Lee, I'm jealous of Lee's style in that he's figured out how to combine the loose with the tight. Mm-hmm. At the same time. So he has loose pattern, loose texture, lots of texture sometimes, a lot of and coming up with a texture that feels organic. Mm-hmm. Is often really hard. And he's kind of mastered that. I'm a little bit jelly over that. Mm-hmm.
If I did then, oh, go ahead.
Well, the problem that most people have when they try to do what he's doing with illustration is they don't figure out how to get tight. And when I say tight, I mean fine detail drawing in areas that really matter, like hands and faces and mm-hmm. other key details that are storytelling details. Mm-hmm. So he's able to let your imagination run by not. So one of the big problems that illustrators have in general is we over illustrate. We over tighten up. We illustrate mm-hmm. too much and we take people out of the imagination and we lock down descriptions that aren't important mm-hmm. with details. He's figured that out. Mm-hmm. And yeah. muted colors.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. I would describe it like if I were trying to do a tight drawing in a moving vehicle and I had my watercolors and pencils and everything set up and
that's I'm trying to
draw and make a straight line, I would get Lee's style. So you somehow, I don't know how you do it sitting still, but you can really see your hand in the style. I think that's cool.
It's my nervous energy. No, actually, when I'm making lines, sometimes I do erase. Sometimes I'll get a really good line and I'll erase that one.
Oh, wow.
To get the more organic line.
That's cool. Hmm. All right, Lee, describe Will's style.
Will's style, if I had to just kind of sum it up, is stylized rendering or stylized realism. I don't know if not stylized rendering, I guess, is a good way to do it because there's a tightness to it, but he has a definite control on all the details and he knows how to control his values. So it never seems overwhelming, but it's nuanced to the nth degree. Like you could keep zooming in. There's never a point where you're like, okay, this is the point where it gets sloppy. It doesn't get sloppy anywhere. Mm-hmm. And there's a nice, like, subtle texture to it. I think your styles evolved, Will's styles evolved a lot over the years. As I just pulled up, just Googled Will Terry, and I see some of the older stuff that was more contrasty that I like less than I like what you're doing now. It seems like you've figured out your value balance. Mm-hmm. But there's a real nice stylized component to it and shape control. It's all very friendly and very round, round shapes. That's definitely one I would describe with Will. There's, you know, as I'm sliding through as a Google search, it's all these just really friendly rounded shapes. A lot of color, but not the color doesn't fight itself. But it's nuanced, mm-hmm. I guess, to a really fine degree.
I would describe Will's style as like blocky, almost like what are those like toys that you would get as a little kid, like Duplo or not Playmobil, but the little guys with the big round heads. I forget the name of those toys, but
bobbleheads.
No, they're not bobbleheads, but they're like the toys you give a preschooler.
Dolls.
They're like toys you give a preschooler, right? So uh-huh. All the shapes are very soft and round and approachable. It's a childlike, like playful style.
An erector set.
Not like an erector set.
Just making stuff up.
Little people. That's what they're called.
Little people. Oh yeah.
You know, they're like the little people are like their proportions are two heads tall, you know, half of it's the head, the other half's the body.
I remember those. I stepped on those in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Kids, yeah.
So it's like little people meets detailed rendering and definitely like a lot of attention paid to light and shadow and how light and color work together. Like so much of your stuff just looks like it's well lit, you know, the sun's in the right spot, the interior lighting or the window is in the right spot, and all your characters have this.
You're gonna add that now that I'm thumbing through it, and Jake's mentioning that everything, there's always a direct light. It's very cinematic lighting. You're controlling mm-hmm. like in the scene light sources that don't exactly mimic what happens in nature. There's like multiple light sources that have different degrees of color and intensity.
Yeah.
And I don't do that at all. So it's just, right. It's a lot different.
We're all three very different.
All right. So how would you, Will, how would you describe my style?
Your style is based in, I would say your style is based in drawing.
Mm-hmm.
You always see the line work. I love that. Mm-hmm. And it's so I'm just going to throw out things that I notice when I look at your stuff. Style, gesture is very important. Weight, your characters always feel. I'm always amazed at how you capture a really natural. I know it's probably your animation background, but like your robots or your creatures and stuff feel like they're in mid movement. They're not static.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that's something that's really hard to capture, for most people.
Mm-hmm.
You've nailed that. That's pretty cool.
So, yeah. So line work and weight to character.
Uh-huh. But the other thing is you're not locked into one way of rendering. You've got like four or five or even six different ways of mm-hmm. of rendering, from more of a comic book style where you can go to black in the shadows mm-hmm. to really subtle lighting and shadow and light. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to nail you down because you know you kind of jump around a little bit, which is cool, but it all fits within the Jake Parker brand.
Yeah, so. Lee, how would you describe it?
There's definitely a focus on the subject matter is definitely, there's a Jake Parker subject matter, in my opinion. There's a style to the work too, but mm-hmm. there's a subject matter as I'm scrolling through your kind of Google search, there's definitely this kind of tech futuristic element that comes up over and over. And I mean, even though I don't think subject matter is style, definitely not as much with Will and me as it is you. There's a definite Jake Parker interest in future fantasy tech that kind of leans the work a certain direction, regardless of the style. And I agree with Will that there's, I think there's three distinct styles that you have. There's this line heavy, more comic book influenced, or I would say not even comic book influenced. It's almost graphic novel influenced, in my opinion. Little Mike Mignola kind of look. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of people, some French comics illustrators in there. And that's kind of one style. And then there's this hybrid style that is your, it's kind of Skyheart look, where there is line, but it's the line's now muted and you're not getting those heavy dark blacks. And then your children's book style actually goes towards a more, I don't want to call it rendered, but there's this haziness to it. There's less emphasis on line work. Looks like you're spending more time getting a little bit more natural effect. So there's the kind of three Jake Parkers, but all three of them share that future tech subject matter and okay. and your sensibility in drawing too.
Cool. All right, so let me ask you guys this. We'll start with Lee. Who was your biggest influences in how you developed your style? Like, what artist, when you saw them, you're like, okay, that gets me, I get them, and this is what I want to do.
Yeah. The first person who hit me like that was Arthur Rackham. When I saw his work, I was so blown away at the way he's stylizing everything. And that was the first time indication of watercolor, even though I didn't come to watercolor for a number of years. When I saw Arthur Rackham, I was like, man, that guy's got something going on. And then through that kind of lineage, it would have been Lisbeth Zwerger that kind of changed everything. She's the only person who can just paint like a simple house on a simple hill with no clouds in the sky, you know, big dominant sky. And it looks great. And there's nothing there. I mean, there's like three shapes in the whole thing. And she didn't try to render the driveway going up and didn't try to render a bunch of trim on the housing, you know, the windows on the house. And it just looks so good. And I mean, I'm still enthralled with her stuff. And I mean, there's like a couple more significant ones. I don't know how far you want me to go, but.
Give us two more. Because I see Elizabeth Berger in your work. I don't see Arthur Rackham. I think that was a surprise to me.
He was kind of a jumping off point. And remember, like as I was going through this phase of development, I was a realist. You know, I was doing very realistic drawing and very realistic painting when I was into him. And that kind of pulled me out of that a little bit because he was stylizing that stuff. Mark English, massive influence, especially going into some of the fine art stuff that I'm doing even now. And way back then, like when I saw Mark English, I was like, that guy has it right. And I still feel that way. I think there's just something so perfect about the way he paints and the way he draws. One of the best, one of the absolute best. And then Gary Kelly was huge for a number of years. Not as much anymore, just because I've changed my sensibilities, but I loved how quirky, and he had this kind of cubist thing that he was doing, but still making these really beautiful and appropriate images for kids' books. It didn't look like he's just aping the style of cubism to be, you know, clever. He just really implemented it in his own way. And yet there's a certain, all these artists, in my opinion, have a certain grace, and I don't know what other word to use, and there's an elegance to the work, and I hope and you know, that's what I strive for, is that there is a grace to the work that I make. And I don't think I've hit any of those people that I mentioned. They're all just so good, but those five have been just consistent, and I still aspire to them.
Okay. Will, what about you? Who are your big inspirations?
So I'm not pretentious like Lee, you know, to come up with the, you know, the old school Arthur Rackham type people and stuff. I'm more realistic and honest with my influences, and so I've looked towards more contemporary artists. So when I was in school, my main heroes and still today, some of these people are probably not as recognizable as others, but Lane Smith, really like his work, and what I liked about him is, you know, and he's still a children's book illustrator today, but one of the things that I really love about his work is he's not afraid to be really innovative with the abbreviations he makes visually. So heavily stylized. And when I looked, especially in school, I would look at his work and I'm like, how do you give yourself permission to draw the way you draw? I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, he goes back and forth between 2D and 3D.
Right. Which is,
and he balances that really well.
Right. Much texture too to his stuff as well.
I see your work. I see his influence in your work now that you mention it.
Oh, really? Cool. Steve Johnson. I've just always loved his stuff. He's a children's book illustrator. You can look him up. My favorite book from him was the Frog Prince Continued.
Wait, isn't that a husband wife combo?
Yeah, and Lou Fancher. But yeah. But I found him before he was working with her.
Oh, okay.
So I just, but anyway, his book, The Frog Prince Continued, which was a collaboration with John Cheska, that was my Bible. I had to break away from him and from Mary Grandprix, who's also a very contemporary illustrator and someone who I've actually been able to work with slightly just in the last few months. So
I could see.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I had to put her work away too. Both of those guys, I was solving problems the way they would solve problems. And finally I'm like, okay, I need to branch off.
Yeah.
Gary, I'll see your Gary Kelly. Cause Gary Kelly was, those illustrations that he was doing in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Just well, that's gorgeous. When were you in college?
Early 90s.
Early 90s. So yeah, that's when you're like, figuring stuff out and you're doing I don't know how you guys did it, but doing some copies or some master studies.
Yeah. It starts leaning your work a lot. There's a lot more influence back then when you see somebody that's really nailing it in your opinion than there is now in my opinion.
And I think that's because of the internet, because now you can consume amazing artwork all day long and never get to the end of Instagram. When before the internet, we would get an illustration annual from CA once a year, and we would get the Society of Illustrators annual once a year, and maybe you'd see a workbook or a showcase, but you got a refreshing of new illustration once a year, basically from those publications, and that was it. You didn't see much other illustration unless you bought a magazine or something, and so
that's a good point.
Yeah,
right. I remember. You had I was hugely influenced by like newspaper comic strips. Mm. So I had the daily, the strips that would show up in the daily paper. Then Sunday they were in color. That was awesome. Cause you got to see how these guys would color it. Mostly I was looking at, Bill Watterson and, I liked Foxtrot as well, the more simplified style that he was doing. But Bill Watterson was like one of my main influences growing up. But then the books would come out, his collections would come out twice a year. So there would be a collection of like a black and white collection, and then he'd come out with black and white with colored strips in it. And I would get all those books. So I would get one for my birthday, and I'd get one for Christmas. And my birthday was in May, or it's still in May, and Christmas, was in December. So it was like this nice amount of time for me to really consume and digest and just understand what was happening with the line work in those books. So if I were to say my influences, it would be early on, it would be Bill Watterson. I still see things that I draw to this day that I learned from Calvin and Hobbes. And like just the other day, as I was going through books, I see this Calvin and Hobbes book and I'm flipping through it and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's where I got it from. I can't say it's my style, but that's the style I draw in, right?
That's so
there's
funny.
That. And then I discovered comic books. I found a comic shop. And this was again in the 90s. I'm a little bit younger than you guys, so it was interesting when I was in my early 20s is when the internet really became ubiquitous. But prior to that, there was a lot of development happening artistically for me. And so the comic shop was huge. And I was exposed to a bunch of American artists, but also they imported a bunch of Japanese comics. And so I really fell in love with a handful of Japanese artists. And what happened was I started mixing the Bill Watterson style with the tech, that the Japanese would do. They draw these cool mechs and these cool like soldiers and technology and stuff like that, spaceships and things. And so by combining those, I kind of fell in love with that subject matter, but also a style that was very much heavily line-based, because that's what they did. They drew in pen and ink, just on white paper, and then maybe later they would add color. And I came to color kind of late. I never felt comfortable with it, and I just learned how to color in Photoshop. And I've never oil painted before. I've touched acrylics maybe twice. If anything, I've painted a lot with watercolor, and that's because Bill Watterson did watercolor, and I could see what he was doing, and kind of I could mimic that a little bit. And so that's where I would hit my influences. So it's like Bill Watterson, it's Yukito Kishiro or Masamune Shirow in Japan, who did Battle Angel Alita and Appleseed, respectively. And then, like Will or Lee was saying, you could see a little bit of like French line art style in there. And there's a French artist named Mobius who also was like a huge influence on me. So that said, that's a lot for my comic stuff. For my children's book illustrations, though, I everything starts with my drawing style. It's the rendering that kind of changes. So I think if you can look past the rendering, you could still see like that's a Jake Parker drawing. But just imagine it being rendered. Like, okay, now I'm going to render in pencil. Now I'm going to render in watercolor. Now I'm going to render in pen and ink. Or now I'm going to render digitally. It's just me putting like a different coat of paint on the same house, you know. But for children's books, I've started doing like the last 3 or 4 children's books have been a line style, an inking line style. And so that's Bill Watterson mixed with Dr. Seuss, basically, is what I'm trying to get
there. I can see the Dr. Seuss thing now that you mentioned that. Mm-hmm. In terms of the coloring with the flat fills and stuff. And
yeah, that's that came from working on Horton Hears a Who in the animation, when I worked in animation.
I didn't know you did that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was in the art department, and they bought every single Dr. Seuss book that he'd ever done. We had like 50 books there, and there's books I never heard of, like legitimate children's books that he did that I'd never seen before. And we memorized those books. We looked at everything. How did Dr. Seuss draw a wheel? Okay, now how did he do like an airplane? Okay, now how would he do like a school building, right? And so we would look at those and combine things, and that's how we created Horton Hears a Who, like the style. Even if there was something he hadn't designed in one of his books, we were able to pull his style and extrapolate what that would look like. So when I started doing children's books in this line style, I think I dipped into that Dr. Seuss stuff that I learned while working on that. Okay, so I bring this up. How to describe our styles. I know this is like, so far this episode is pretty like, self-focused. What's that called?
Egotistical? Like,
maybe egotistical. I don't know. We're very much focused on ourselves. But the reason I bring all this up is when you're thinking, you listening to this podcast, you're thinking about your style and how you draw, or whether or not you felt like you come up with a style, I want you to think about what we've talked about here. Number one, how we've described our style of each other, and then what influences we've looked at to develop our own styles. All right? So I want to ask you guys, how did you, based on the style that you work in now, based on your influence that you've had, how did you actually develop the style that you're working in now? Was it deliberate, or was it just something naturally that happened? Go for it, Will.
I could not generate illustrations without looking at other illustrators when I was in school. And I couldn't draw very well, and I didn't know how to draw things out of my out of my head. I didn't have a good working method, so I relied so much on finding good illustrators that had solved the problems I was trying to solve. And naturally I gravitated towards that, the short list that I read, but there were many other illustrators as well. Heinrich Drescher comes to mind. And then I became, I mean, bluntly, I became jealous of their styles in a good way. You know, like I just loved it so much that I was like, it just spoke to me. And so, yeah, I started copying, and I would come to class and my classmates would say, oh, definitely looking at so-and-so, you know, like that looks exactly.
That's
like
always an embarrassing little bit of a moment in my
opinion. It is. But you know what? I knew when I was getting too close, because I would hear that, you know, like, wow.
Yeah, but really, I think it's necessary for development.
It really is. And
the embarrassing part there is trying to pass it off as your own.
Right.
You know?
And really, I think as I became a teacher of illustration, I would encourage my students to look at other people. Don't hide your influences. Celebrate it in class. This is class work. This is not professional work. There's a time to learn this way, and then over time, put that away. I had a student one time. I mean, I've had a lot of students that have kind of mimicked my work, but I had one that absolutely couldn't do anything without basically taking an illustration of mine. And
yours was his style guide, basically.
It was a style guide completely. And then the other students started giving him crap. And, you know, and I had talked to him and said, you know, it doesn't bother me at all. As long as, you know, when you leave school, you'll have to, in order to do your own work, you'll have to put it away and try to solve things on your own. And he never did, to my knowledge. And I saw him for years and years after school on Facebook, and he never did figure out how to, you know. The other thing I think is, don't just follow one person. You know, he got really locked into the way I was solving things. Like, if you at least follow 3 to 5 other people, you should start to combine those 3 to 5 people into one unique style, as long as they're different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but just to speak to Jake's question, So you're in school and you're like, okay, I got an illustration assignment. And then are you actively saying, okay, look at the way Lane Smith is doing this door. I'm going to do my door that way. I mean, that's how you kind of start it, right? I mean, you have to walk down that path in a conscious way. You can't just look at a bunch of stuff and say, okay, I'm just going to do it like those people. There's an intention to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that how you developed, Will?
Yeah, it is. And more than just like, this is how to draw these nouns, you know, this is these objects. It was, oh, look at how he's letting this background fall away into nothing. I would never have thought to do that. Mm. I would have illustrated too much back there. And that, I think learning what not to illustrate is probably one of the hardest things, if not the hardest thing in illustration.
When to stop rendering, when to, you know.
It's a sensibility.
To let a background fade away, or
it's a sensibility that's developed over time, and you cannot just learn it. You can't just go to class one day and go, okay, I'm not going to over illustrate it. It takes years to learn how not to do that.
So this artist, sorry, Will, I didn't want to cut you off.
Oh,
is there
good.
Anything? Okay. I wanted to add somebody to my list. I just sent Jake and Will a little image of it. This woman, I think she's in the UK. Her name's Laura Carlin. Current influence, heavy influence. And I just, it's so unique because, in my opinion, there's some styles that are definitely quote unquote style, like a Gary Kelly or like a Lane Smith, for example, where you can say, I'm going to take that house the way they did that house on that hill, and I'm going to do it that way. Or John Klassen is a perfect example. Like, that is a identifiable thing. You can walk down that path, and your style can look like that. Laura Carlin and some of these people I'm influenced by now are so raw that it would actually be hard, even if you said, okay, I'm going to draw. I don't even know how you'd pull from it. It's because the drawing style is so raw that it's almost just you. That's all there is. And that's kind of the direction that I'm going now, too. As a matter of fact, when I get to my images to the place where I would have called them finished 4 years ago, I go back and I beat them up a little bit. Because they're coming from that place that I consider now too polished. And so I beat the crap out of them at the end. It's my last, where I used to the last stage be adding detail. now my last stage is wrecking stuff, which I think gives it a little bit more natural. And again, a little bit more, shows a little more hand of the artist, in my opinion. But I do want to add this little thing. I want to get you guys' opinion on it. Still, even when I'm, even now, when, you know, doing these, all this pro stuff and stuff that gets published and big clients and all that, I still feel like the work doesn't add up. When I look at my page, that I've got my Pinterest page, and if you guys who are listening are familiar with our dream portfolio, it's an assignment that I used to give where I collect basically the 20 best images I can find, and only 20 images can go in this portfolio. So if an image comes in, that means another one has to go out. So I only keep 20 images in it. And when I pull up that page, I still feel like I can't live up to that page. It's funny because yeah. I think it's important to say it, because there's never a time, at least in my career so far, that I felt like, okay, I'm good to go, I'm the best, I'm as good as I can get.
I'm firing all cylinders here. I'm nailing every drawing.
Nobody can beat me. I feel like it pales compared to this page that I have in front of me right now. Do you guys feel that way?
I do that too. Like, I think this comes from, like you're saying, what's cool is like you're still pushing yourself. You're still looking for what's the next thing. What's this next style mountain I'm gonna climb and try to conquer. And I do the same thing too. It's like, otherwise you just get bored, and it doesn't get fun to draw if I'm not exploring. And so with exploring and with learning and pushing yourself comes this thing where this almost this feeling of inferiority to the styles that you, or the other artists that you feel are like nailing it and getting it. And I think, I think that's healthy, and I think it's good, so long as it doesn't curtail your work. So long as you keep creating and you keep working. If it is, you know, becoming like a source of depression, you know.
Now, that's good to add in there, too, because when I look at the page, all I am is inspired by it and humbled by it, too.
Right.
At the same time.
Right. So I think that's healthy. I think though, if it is keeping you from creating, then I would dial back a little bit and do what it takes to make creating fun, make illustration fun for you. Or at least, if not fun, at least... Like you're not spinning wheels, but like you're actually getting traction with what you're doing. Okay, so I want to kind of sum up what we've talked about and then transition into another area of style. So for a person developing their style, it can be done deliberately, but it also is something that's a little bit more, there's a deliberate, but I guess a naturalness to it. So I feel like if I were to be advising somebody right now, I would say get your five favorite artists that you love. And if you don't have five favorite artists, go to a library, go to Pinterest, go somewhere where you could just surround yourself with all different kinds of art and pick out five different artists that you love. It could be 20 too, but we could say just limit it to five, because I think all of us have like a core five. And then there's, you know, 20 or 50 others where we're pulling little things here and there and adding them. But look at those five. Look at how they do environments. Look at how they do characters. Look at how they do lighting. Look at how they do textures. Look at all those things. And then start creating either master studies where you're just straight up copying them, or creating your own illustrations as if you were drawing like that person, as if that person had that same assignment. And that's one thing I did. I remember I came up with a cartoon character called Roach Boy. He was this character that got fused with roach DNA, and and so he could like fly, and he could resist like radioactive bombs or whatever, and he could talk to all the roaches, right? So this is this dumb character, but I had these three favorite comic artists, and I was like, what would it look like if they drew him? You know, I would love it if I could call them up and have them draw him, but I can't do that, so I'm just going to draw it as if they drew him. So I drew it like Mike Mignola, I drew it like Dave Johnson, and I drew it like one of my Japanese artists, I forget which one, that I liked. And that was a huge learning experience, because I had to go through all their work and be like, well, what pose would this guy do this character in? Okay, now how would they handle the line work? How would they handle this detail? How do they draw a boot or a goggle, you know, goggles? And I walked away with that, like, just learning so much, and a little piece of each one of those illustrators became a part of me and a part of my work. So the advice I would give is find your five illustrators, do studies or do versions of their work with your own, you know, your own illustration assignment. And then I would do, once you've done 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 of those illustrations, I would put all the reference away and I would just sit down and create and draw create an illustration of what comes from inside you.
Mm-hmm.
And right there, what you're seeing on that paper from those illustrations where you've put all that stuff away, that is going to be whatever you like about that, lean into that hard and keep developing that. And that's where your style is going to come from. Would you guys agree or add anything to that or disagree?
I would totally disagree.
Don't do any of that. Shut up,
Jake. No. That's what I've always taught my students is, mm-hmm. Even if you just make a list and you say, from this artist, I like their line weight. Mm-hmm. So line weight is going to be one of the things that I include in my style. But this, you know, influenced by this person. Mm-hmm. I like the color sensibilities of this other artist. I like, you know, and you build with a list of words. You can build a style that way by coming up with all the things you like. And then be conscious of incorporating those things.
Well, I want to play devil's advocate for a second here. I'm going to disagree with you, even though I actually agree with you. Well, it's interesting. I'm going to pull from the archives. We get a lot of emails from different people, you know, sending us stuff about the podcast and podcast suggestions and you know their opinion on it. And we got an email. Recently talking about style and it was from somebody that was outside the US and she was saying it's funny to hear you guys even use the word style. She said we don't even think about style in that way. Like what we're basically saying here is style is a conscious, very, very deliberate choice. And I think that's unique to us three kind of saying that. In art school, they did not tell me that at all. As a matter of fact, they pushed me way away from it. And they said, sort of what this person who wrote to us said was, you start with life drawing and your style will naturally evolve from that experience. I don't know if I agree with that because you're starting off very realist and then how does your style come out of that? But anyway, people feel that way, and a lot of teachers feel that way, and a lot of colleges teach that way. What do you guys think about that?
So here's how I feel about that. I think that we're both talking about the same thing, but what we're talking about is being more conscious of the transition and the evolution. And I think they're preaching don't be conscious of it. Just let it happen naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know what was funny about that? Just one real quick. Sorry to cut you off. But you know, we had some celebrity teachers at school and that, you know, they're preaching this stuff. They're looking at a certain set of artists too, that influence how they paint and draw. But then in the undergrad, especially at junior, senior level, there was a whole group of ducklings that sort of followed those teachers and they were all talking about how natural their style developed. And it was all the same.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, with the life drawing example, I feel like every school has a life drawing style. So you could look at different portfolios and be like, oh, that person went to SCAD, or, oh, that person, you know, went to Art Institute, or this person went to BYU. And it's because life drawing, you're doing the same thing. Your teacher is showing you, this is how you life draw. You know, this is how you carve a character on the page.
Right,
and everybody's learning from that teacher because they don't have any other experience life drawing. So, automatically they're copying a style, and their life drawing style is coming out of that. So, I think to that, I'll say when I was in life drawing, it was in my early 20s. I asked my teacher. I said, you know, I'm worried about style. Like, how do I even develop a style? What do I do? And he dismissed me like. Right away, just shook his head. He's like, don't worry about style. Style is something that's going to happen when you're 30 and you're going to look back and realize, oh my gosh, I have a style. and it's not going to be anything that you you know, that you forced into happening. It's just going to come from you doing a lot of drawing, and he said, don't worry about it. And to a degree, he was right. I felt like I didn't have a unique style to me. I still feel like my style isn't that unique, even though I'll see something that someone else drew, obviously looking at my work and be like, oh, that person copied me. Mm-hmm. Right. They're looking at Jake Parker's work, and I don't take offense or anything. I think it's flattering, but that when I see someone else doing my style, that's when I realize, oh, I have a style.
Right.
Though I'm not deliberately like thinking about that when I sit down to draw at this point. Mm. It used to be that I'm going to draw on this person's style. I'm going to draw on this person's style. I'm going to mix these two together and I'm going to make a drawing. And now when I sit down to draw, that stuff fades away. And I'm just like, I'm going to draw this character and this is what they look like. Mm-hmm. And my style comes through. So,
yeah, you know, it's a good point that you made about the life drawing stuff, because there was two teachers in the LA area when I was going to school, and I'll go ahead and name them right now, 'cause they're fantastic artists. There's Glenn Vilppu, who teaches, he's a life drawing teacher, in the animation slant of things. Mm-hmm. And he teaches this very gestural, very constructive method. And then the polar opposite of that is Jeff Watts Atelier. If you guys look either of those up, highly recommend both of them. But they have a very tonal approach. Everything's lit, and then you're basically shadow mapping and doing a very tonal approach to figure drawing. And mm-hmm. it's so funny, because if you go to either one of those teachers in schools, it is all the students are drawing the exact same way, even though they are just drawing figure drawing. They're not even concerned about quote-unquote style or anything, but they are following right down mm-hmm. you know, doing exactly what the teachers are doing. And you couldn't get them confused if you tried. Like, they're so identifiable. So right. You're right. They're just not talking about it, but they're doing the exact same thing.
Hmm. Yeah.
So I agree. If you look at, do we have time for me to, you look like you're under schedule, Jake.
My wife just was saying something. I thought she was talking to me, but she was on the phone.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, go for it, Will.
I think that we're also talking about giving like a one size fits all advice. And I think mm-hmm. since we're all individuals, some advice is going to resonate with some people and speak to them artistically. And then the same advice is going to conflict with someone else. If you take two artists that I'm thinking of right now, Eric Roman, the Caldecott mm-hmm. winning, children's book illustrator, and Peter Siss, mm-hmm. more of a, I guess, editorial, but he also does children's books. Peter Siss, his style, you can see it from a mile away. It's always the same in my opinion. I just recognize his work right away. Eric Roman changes his style like a chameleon for every book. So if you did a Google search on Eric Roman, and it's Rohmann, you're going to see a different style on every single book he does. And I stayed at his house once and visited his studio, and he showed me and some other friends his method. And he was working on, I can't remember the name of the book. It was the one with the tiger on the cover.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Yeah. He was working on that. And he was actually trying to invent a new style. And he had no idea what it was going to look like. But he was playing around with different things to make new textures. And that was so foreign to the way that I think. You know? Mm. So I don't think that necessarily, like the woman that gave us that email from Europe, there's different ways
from
of looking
UK.
At it from
I don't think I've seen an artist go so far in terms of style. I mean, you couldn't tell that this between books that this is the same person in any capacity.
It's crazy.
I didn't know that he had that big of a swing of style. Some of it is literally photorealistic and rendered, and the others is kind of clunky line cartoony look. Oh man, that's interesting.
And you know, to be fair to the rest of us, you know, he won the Caldecott for My Friend Rabbit, and you know, when you win the Caldecott, that gives you, didn't we do an episode on the Caldecott?
Yeah,
okay. We did.
You know, I mean, like, there's a grip of money that's coming in for the rest of
the He also won the Caldecott for Time Flies.
Right.
And, which is the rendered book.
And I know. So, and so it, and so when you have more money, to me, you have more freedom because you have more time. And when you have more time, you can experiment and play with your paint alchemy. And when you don't, and you're worried about, you know, putting food on the table, you kind of have to probably kind of stay in the same style. Because if your experiments aren't working out, that's going to cost you financially. So,
well, it's true.
All right, so I wanted to ask you guys, what styles have you seen come and then go during your illustration career?
The advertising slick stuff.
Yeah, the real rendered stuff. The
like the airbrush detailed.
Look, yeah.
Yeah, and then the Joe Soren era. Early 2000s, late 1990s was definitely Joe Soren. If you guys look him up, you'll see that style. And then I don't know if I want to say what.
There's like a Jake Parker style that's kind of going out right now.
Well, there's the Carson Ellis one that we're deep in. I've talked about it before. We're deep in the Carson Ellis, John Klassen.
Well, I don't want to go there yet, but in your career, though, you've seen, like, is there, so Mary Grand Prix, right? She drew Harry Potter, illustrated Harry Potter almost 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm,
Do you see her do you see her style still happening currently now? Like,
no.
Is that not as much, not at all, no. No, okay. Everything has moved, in the children's book world at least, a lot more primitive. Mm-hmm. And less colorful. And I don't think that today she would be hired to do that. That was a time that was perfect for her. And
you think she's not getting work?
No. I think she's getting work. I just think that, well, her style has totally evolved. She's doing work that doesn't look like that at all right now.
I haven't seen her work. I've got to look it up.
Yeah. She's doing a lot of what looks like gallery work too, more abstract type stuff.
What about... do you remember that book, The Day Jimmy's Boa Constrictor Ate the Wash? That was from the 80s. It was kind of like a line, like a black line drawing with watercolor added to it. Do you see much of that happening?
Not as much
anymore.
Like that, as much. Like the Alexander's Terribly, Horribly, Rotten, No Good Day.
Yeah, a little bit of that too.
Judith Viorst kind of stuff. Like, yeah. It's funny how things... And the hard part about when you're talking about style and styles evolving and styles becoming less in demand and going out of style is if you're the artist that and you feel like your style is going out of style, that's a tough place to be because where do you go from there if that's exactly what you love doing? You know, if you come up with your list of things that just do it for you, what do you do then?
Well, and I think we... Lee brought up a good point in that he himself is still evolving. And I see you evolving too, Will. Yeah. Like I look at your little people, like your little heroes. That's a step away from what you've been doing.
Yeah. And then I got the Bonaparte series with that. So, yeah.
So I think the point I want to make here is that styles come and go, trends come and go, and... But that doesn't mean you as an illustrator have to come and go. I think what we talked about here in developing your initial style is also a pathway to evolving your style as you get older and as your career advances as an illustrator. So what would you say the contemporary style is today, Lee? Like what's you know, every other children's book look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's heavily influenced by, I think, Carson Ellis and John Klassen. It's a very clean-edged, textured look, but there's a certain couple of things that really go with that look. There's a certain rock that everybody's drawing that's a round-top rock. I don't know, there's just some ingredients, that, I guess, that go with that particular style. And not that it's not good, by the way. I do want to add, I think it's lovely. It's amazing work. But there is, you know, as I go through my Instagram feed, sometimes I think it's one person and it's somebody else. And then I'll think it's okay. It's that person. The next time I see it, nope, it's somebody else. And,
I would describe the style as flat, blocky shapes. two-dimensional shapes, highly textured. So almost as if they're doing, you know, the characters on some sort of different kind of paper and with watercolor mixed in with it and not very much line work added to it, almost collage-like, and then putting it all together. And I know this stuff is, it's like a mixed media. It really is like they're scanning textures, they're scanning watercolors, and then they're putting them together in Photoshop and creating like these finished pieces out of them. That's I see a lot of that happening. However, you also see almost in a handful of books, especially award winners, sometimes they'll be the exact opposite. There's a winner a couple of years ago for a Caldecott. It may have been the winner or it may have been an honor, but it was about railroads or the train system. Do you guys remember that?
Say it again.
I remember that. Book. Yeah, I remember the one with the train on the cover.
Yeah.
Engine.
I forget the name of that illustrator. I'm going to look it up here. It struck me as, oh, this is so cool that this particular style is winning an award when I'm seeing so many bestsellers and so many award winners that are in this more collage-y, textured style.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just look it up here.
And while you're looking that up, I just want to add that I looked up Mary Grant Priest's current work, and I just texted Will and Jake. Maybe I'll put this in the show notes if you guys want to see it. But Mary Grant Priest doing paintings exactly like some of the fine art stuff I'm doing right now, and I have never seen her work before. And so it's an interesting point to bring up that sometimes people land in the same spot. Well, I've never seen her gallery stuff before, but wouldn't you guys say that the pictures I just sent you are in the same world?
Oh yeah, totally.
I mean,
yeah,
they're almost crazy. I mean, it's so close, and I've never seen her work, her gallery stuff before. But we ended up
You're drinking from the same well.
That is so weird. I have to look and see how she landed there because there is. I mean, I'm making this stuff up without a ton of influence. I'm kind of just sitting at my art desk and just playing with shapes and stuff like that. But her work looks exact. If I put them together and said that was one artist, I don't think anybody would doubt it.
Yeah. So the Caldecott winner for 2014 was by Brian Floca, I think is how you pronounce it.
Yeah, and it's the engine that's coming right straight at you.
Yeah, it's titled Locomotive, and it's very much a linear style. Not highly rendered, but very, very detailed. So what I want to say about that is as you're developing your style and as you're looking at what's contemporary and what can get you work, you know, next week or next year, think about what you actually want to do with your career. Do you want to be, it could be just as simple as I just want to make money. I want to have, three books lined up and not have to worry about, you know, my next project because, everybody's wants to work with me. And it could be that mimicking or not even mimicking, but developing a style that's very much contemporary could be the thing for you. But there's another thing too, and that is it could be that developing your own style or bringing a style that you see somewhere else into children's books could be the thing that sets you apart from everyone. So I think what it is you've got art directors who they want either something familiar or they want something wildly different, you know, or they want something different enough that it doesn't feel familiar, but it still goes with the subject matter. And so there's just different strategies here. I'm not going to say what strategy is the best strategy or what you should do right now, but I think for like the three of us, finding a style that we like that's appropriate for how we like to work has been a way for us to get work. I don't think we've chased trends or we've chased a particular style. We've sort of done what we found appealing, and the art director found that and said, that's what we want for this book.
But we were also looking at people who are already getting work from art directors who had also vetted the work that we're looking at. So there's a kind of a pre-built in approval process in how we developed it. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I should say too, switching to the like pen and ink style, because I did several children's books, which were like highly rendered with pencil and some Photoshop, like lighting and color to them. And switching to the ink style, like I had to do several like ink drawings in that style and show them to art directors and say, this is the style I want to work in. And it took, you know, it just took one of them to say, okay, yeah, let's do it that style for me to then start getting other work in that style.
I've never had an art director ever say anything about the work that I turn in terms of style. They either like it or they want some changes, but I've never had one say, oh, this is different, even, you know, from the first book I did to now. Nobody's ever mentioned it. And I'm always really worried about it when I'm sending something in, like, oh my God, I'm using watercolor now instead of acrylic and collage instead of whatever I was doing before. No lighting is falling on these characters at all, where I used to light quite heavily. Never noticed it. Never said a thing. So yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. It might come down to the way you draw a character and the way you do compositions. Like, those haven't changed.
True.
Right.
It's just, again, it's just like the rendering is what's.
But I think a lot of times when people think they make a style jump, they didn't really. Yeah. It's not as drastic as you think it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Okay. I'm just going to wrap it up there. I think this was
a good one. I really like this subject.
Yeah, thanks. That's thanks fine. For your input and your thoughts, guys. It was really cool to hear your perspective. You know, three different points of perspective on this.
Wow. Wow. That hit on the sliding glass door.
Yep.
Hey, Jake. All right, everybody. Jake, who sponsors this podcast?
I was just getting to that. Oh. I just wanted to thank everybody for joining us. And right now they're all clicking off and they're moving on to whatever podcast is next. But if you're going to hang around and listen to the end, you're going to learn that this podcast is sponsored by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. And we've got a ton of cool illustration classes there. Sign up, try it out for a few months, see how you like it. We're working on a children's book curriculum that could take you through, I don't know, 20 different lessons on every aspect of doing children's books. So that's coming this next year, something that we're currently working on. So subscribe now to get, I think, to kind of get locked in on our early pricing for that, because I know it's going to go up with the children's books thing. Anyway, your hosts have been Will Terry. You can find his work at willterry.com and go follow him on Instagram at willterryart. And we also have Lee White. His website is leewhiteillustration.com. And you can follow him on Instagram at leewhiteillo. And I'm Jake Parker. You can find my work at mrjakeparker.com. And you can find me on Instagram at Jake Parker. Okay, podcast is edited by Alex Sugg. That's Sugg with two G's. And you can find his work at alexsugg.com. And our podcast is produced by Tanner Garlick. He's the one that gets it on the air so that you can... on the internet, so that you can listen to it however you listen to it. So we thank Tanner for that. If you like this episode, share it around. You know, podcasts live and die by word of mouth. And so we'd love it if you just let people know about what you're learning here and what you like about this podcast. We'd really appreciate that. And we'd love how many people have written in and emailed us and told us what they're learning from the podcast and how much it helps them. So we hope that today's episode was no different. So if this is your first time listening, please subscribe so you can get notified when the next podcast drops. And I think that's it. Oh, go to svslearn.com and click on the forums. And we have a thread for each of the podcasts that we've done. So you can see what other illustrators and other artists think about the topic that we've talked about today. All right, I think that's it, and we will see you guys next time. Bye.